So we start hour number three. Welcome back, or good afternoon. I am Jim Rome. Great to have you here. We are live in the Quicken Loan Studios. Apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently. All right, I'm going to be fully transparent. Right now, instead of watching sports on one of my monitors, I'm watching a stolen car pursuit. And the fact, this stolen car pursuit's here in SoCal. It's about literally about 20 miles from where we are right now. I'm hoping that this guy can keep this thing going for another hour, because I'm going to get off the air and get in my car and go watch. No way this thing goes another hour. I want to partake. A little early in the day, he already got out. He got T-boned completely by a couple of cops and somehow got out of that. It's early in the day for a stolen car pursuit. Now, you can get one of these things almost every single day, but generally not this early in the day here in SoCal. Obviously, more often at night. All right, more on that in a minute. I'll keep you posted. But I am watching that right now. It's off to my right. They're about 20 miles away from us. And again, I'm not suggesting you do so. I'm saying that I may do so. I may get in my car and try to join that pursuit. Just kidding. Don't at me. I didn't mean that. That was a joke. He's still going, though. We're joined right now by an analyst with the MLB Network, the NHL Network, Fox Sports, a complete renaissance man, an aficionado of the classic PBS show Ghost Rider. John Morosi joins us. John, good morning. How are you, John?
Jim, thanks so much for the kind introduction, and I really appreciate that Ghost Rider has now been entered into the canon of my life experience, which I very much enjoy.
Absolutely so, and I respect it, so I had to do it.
Thank you.
Now, there is a lot of news involving the LA Dodgers. Let me start right there, but let me go back first to Sunday and Cody Bellinger getting pulled by Dave Roberts for not hustling on a double that was sent to Triple Zally. John, when you saw that, what was your reaction to it?
Jim, my reaction was that this is something that probably happens when a team is really underperforming, which is the case for the Dodgers. That was true even before, of course, the Seager news of yesterday. But this is a team that really has struggled early. Injuries are part of it, but they're not all of it. And I think that was Dave Roberts' message there, saying that, listen, we don't have Justin Turner, we don't have Logan Forsyth, and now Yasiel Puig, and now Seager and Rich Hill as well. But there are certain things that we have got to do that are conducive to getting back to the World Series. And Andy McCullough of the LA Times reported subsequent to that decision by Dave Roberts that Roberts had actually spoken with Bellinger about his effort on the field previous to that play and that at-bat. So it wasn't as though that was an isolated incident. That was something that was building for a while, and I think Dave Roberts wanted to send a very firm message. Bellinger was resolute in saying on his own part, I've always played hard. So both men said their piece, and then, of course, the day yesterday, losing Seager for the season, losing another game to the Arizona Diamondbacks. And, Jim, I think it's important to note, every single team in the majors last year that reached the playoffs had a winning record on this day 1 year ago. The Dodgers right now are below 500 and in fourth place in the National League West.
I love that note. Not if I'm the Dodgers, but that's a key note. John Morosi joining us. Now, obviously, they're not playing well. In fact, they really are struggling. And then there is that news that you mentioned. Corey Seager expected to miss the rest of the season due to Tommy John surgery. How devastating a blow is that for the Dodgers?
Well, it is devastating. And we heard from Dave Roberts yesterday, and I think his initial comments, he referred to Seager as our best player, then rephrased that and said one of our best players. But I really believe that he is in so many ways, Jim, the player who makes his team go for what he means to them offensively and defensively. They're going to move Chris Taylor down to the infield. He played there last night. He's a natural infielder, even though he played center field for them a lot last year for the Dodgers. But the interesting thing to me, Jim, is that the sustainability of Taylor at shortstop is equally dependent upon the offensive production of the guys who are replacing Taylor and now Puig in the outfield, including the young Alex Verdugo. They need Jock Peterson to be very good. So I would say this, the worse that the production is out of the outfield, the more that the Dodgers have to find a way to maybe add a shortstop, and the name that everybody's going to be talking about is Manny Machado. Machado's in the final year of his deal with the Orioles. But I would note, Jim, that last year the Dodgers and Orioles had some conversations in July about Zach Britton. That deal did not come to pass. And both teams have a reputation of being somewhat deliberate in the way they handle their trade conversations. So I'm not sure I'm about to say that there's going to be a really high chance of a deal happening between those two teams. The Dodgers may just have to find a way to make do with their internal options, especially for the time being.
John Morosi joining us. John, I hear exactly what you're saying, but let me try to keep that trade alive for another follow anyway. If the Dodgers did want to go out and they want to make a move for Manny Machado, what do you think they would have to give up, and then how much would that impact their lineup?
Well, it's a very great question, Jim, because I think that they would have to probably surrender a Walker Buehler-type arm. Now, Buehler, of course, we've already seen him pitch in the big leagues with the Dodgers this year. He's their best pitching prospect. It would probably have to be someone of that level. I think you look around and the price tag even for the shorter-term bats that we've seen make a big impact, and that's probably what the price would be. Now, the interesting thing, and where it could help the Dodgers a little bit, maybe where they could find a way to make the deal work without giving up Buehler, is that there are not that many teams right now in the major leagues who need a shortstop or even a third baseman, which is, and some would say, is Machado's best position in general. So there's no question in my mind, at least, and Manny wouldn't say this, but I feel comfortable saying it, he would have to welcome the chance to get traded to L.A., put up the numbers there in a pennant race, one would hope at least. And then obviously once you're traded, you don't have the draft pick competition attached to you. A lot of reasons why Machado would like to have that trade happen. We'll see if it does. But the Dodgers, interestingly, I was talking to one of their officials last night. The answer was, yeah, well, sure, we'd love to get a Machado or somebody that level, but we have to win some games first to make it really worth our while to do this. So as hard as it is to believe, the Dodgers, Jim, they have to find a way to keep winning some ballgames to even justify the high cost of acquiring a Manny Machado.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. John Morosi joining us. It's a really key point. What if, for instance, they did do that? So, I mean, there's how much he would impact their lineup, John, but then how would that impact their ability to make other moves? For example, the lineup is not their only problem right now. So could they do a deal like that conceivably and still have something left to help in their bullpen a little bit later on in the season if that's what they decide to do?
That's a great question because one of the key things, Jim, for the Dodgers is they're trying to make all these moves without exceeding the luxury tax threshold. They want to reset their obligations after this year and then be more aggressive in spending in the future. What that means is that most of their big-time trades, if they make them in July, would need to be cash neutral. In other words, the Orioles, if they're going to trade a Machado, the Dodgers may well say, listen, yeah, we'll take Machado, but you've got to pay all the money, and that, of course, would then increase probably the prospect price the Dodgers have to trade to make that a workable deal from the Orioles' standpoint. So I think if it's a cash-neutral deal, if it's a controllable relief pitcher from a team, maybe even like the Reds, for example, Raisel Iglesias, if they would bring Iglesias in as the setup guy to a Kenley Jansen, that's a possibility. Because as you point out, this is a team that also misses Brandon Morrow. They've had Josh Fields pitch pretty well for them, but there's a lot of youth there for this team and a lot of inexperience now as that group has turned over. So to me, you're right. This is not the only concern for the Dodgers. But I think one thing, too, the bigger picture, Jim, to make is that they really miss Justin Turner. The at-bats he has given them for so long, the consistency that he has, it is noticeably absent from the Dodgers lineup so far this season.
No doubt. John Morosi joining us. And you mentioned Morrow. Not helping that he's killing it right now, too.
Yes, he is.
Now, John, what about the Nationals? Let me get out to them really quickly. They're not exactly off to a flying start either. In fact, they're three games under 500. How concerned should they be on May 1st?
Well, they should be concerned. And one of the interesting things about that division, too, Jim, is that the Braves are better than we thought they were going to be. The Phillies have been, at least. I'm not sure how sustainable that's going to be. And then the Mets, with how well they've pitched. The Nationals, they should be concerned because they've got, to me, some risky health situations where they're waiting on Daniel Murphy to come back. They're waiting on Adam Eaton. Anthony Rendon is still on the DL. Their bullpen, they really don't have that many trustworthy relievers outside of their big three at the end of the game there in Doolittle, Madsen, and Kinsler. So they need more bullpen depth. Their lineup is not as deep as it used to be. And their competition in that division, we had thought, I think a lot of us, Jim, looking at the overall picture of the major leagues, okay, the Nationals are in a really good spot because they've got some rebuilding teams in their division. That's going to be some cheap wins, let's say. It's not that way right now. Yes, the Marlins are still rebuilding, but the Braves and Phillies are tougher than anybody thought, which means that trying to climb out of a hole of being three games under 500 right now is a tougher task than we expected it was going to be. And the Braves get even better today. They call up Mike Soroka, a really strong young pitcher from Western Canada, Jim. So Ronald Acuna Jr., Ozzie Albies, who could be the first, actually only the second middle infielder ever at 21 years of age or under to have a 900 OPS, joining only Alex Rodriguez. That's how good Ozzie Albies has been for the Braves. So a ton of young talent there in Atlanta. That team is on the rise.
John Morosi is everywhere. John, last night, Josh Hader of the Brewers was incredible. 2 2/3 innings, he struck out 8 to get the save against the Reds. This guy's got 39 strikeouts in 18 innings. If he works ahead, if he gets a two-strike count on you, it's over. Exactly what do the Brewers have in this guy?
He is a dynamic reliever, Jim, and I'm glad you asked about him because he's one of the great stories of the game. You mentioned that strikeout rate, the walk rate. His strikeouts per nine, 19.5 strikeouts per nine innings. These are numbers that we just simply do not see. And the key thing is, Jim, he has lowered his walk rate from last year to this year. He's almost cut it in half. And in doing that, he has become, I know Mark DeRosa made the comparison today, every bit as dynamic as Andrew Miller. He is basically the National League Andrew Miller. He's been traded twice, actually. The Orioles in his home state of Maryland drafted him, traded him to Houston. Houston dealt him to the Brewers, and he has become a dynamic reliever. There was a lot of conversation earlier in his career, would he be a starting pitcher, but he has found his home in the bullpen. He's even better now than he was last year. His stuff is so dynamic, and now that it's in the zone, hitters, Jim, simply do not have a chance against him. So he is fun to watch, and one of the many reasons why the Brewers could be heading back to the playoffs for the first time, only the second time here in this entire decade. So a lot of excitement right now in Milwaukee.
He is filthy. John, one last thought. I want to go back a few weeks because you were there in San Juan, Puerto Rico, working the series between Minnesota and Cleveland. I've got to know, what was that experience like for you?
It was great, and it was really heartening, encouraging, inspiring. The strength of the people of Puerto Rico was remarkable. On Wednesday, we had another power outage there on the island that basically knocked out power to the whole island, and the ballpark, remarkably, was powered back up by the middle part of the day, and then eventually the surrounding area got power sometime after the ballpark. So there was just, you really got the sense, Jim, of just how important baseball is to the people of Puerto Rico, and truly how these moments to come together as a society, as a community, how much those two games meant to them. So the noise, it's if you've never seen a game in Latin America, and if you love baseball, I would recommend so much to go to Puerto Rico, go to the Dominican, go to Mexico, Venezuela, Cuba, any place you can, just experience it, because it's like the way that we watch soccer in this country and watch it in Europe. That passion is just so hard to describe until you've heard it. Heard it for yourself. It's just that remarkable. And the message, Jim, that I kept hearing from player after player, the legends of Puerto Rico, Carlos Beltran, Carlos Delgado, they said that the island's back open for business. The resiliency they've shown is remarkable, and such a beautiful place with great people. So I would highly recommend a trip to Puerto Rico right now as well.
And then quickly, John, I talked about it at length, but what was it like in the stadium when Francisco Lindor homered in the fifth inning of the first game of that series?
You know, it was remarkable. And the thing I love about the flight of that ball, Jim, is it got so high that you had a chance to actually ask yourself, is this really happening? Is he really coming back to his hometown? Now, remember, he had left the island at 14 to go to high school in Florida. He wanted to have a better academic, better athletic opportunity. So he leaves the island. That was actually his first game back there since he was basically in youth baseball. And his mother was there. And by the time I got up to the stands, we had the honor of speaking with her on FS1 on our broadcast that night. And her glasses were foggy because of the tears she had cried. Jim, it was one of my favorite all-time interviews. Her authentic emotion was just so rich, and just to see the sacrifice of having your young kid leave home for 4 years and then go on and chase his dream all around the country and the hemisphere, to come back and have that moment, Jim, I still get goosebumps talking about it now. It was my honor to be there.
It was an amazing moment. You can see him on MLB Network, NHL Network, Fox Sports. He is a true Renaissance man, and do not forget it, an aficionado of the classic PBS show Ghost Rider. John, so good to have you back. Thank you very much for the time.
Jim, thanks so much. It's truly a great time here. Love the Stanley Cup playoffs. Love Major League Baseball. It's an honor to talk to you again, my friend. Thank you
so much. You too, John. Thanks so much. John Morosi, you're so good. All right, quick timeout. When we return, let's talk Patriots football. My man just got spun out also in that car pursuit. More still ahead. Getting maximum performance out of anything depends on what you put into it. If you want to achieve max performance at work, you put in the extra effort. When you want maximum performance from your kids, you put in the extra time. When you want maximum performance from your vehicle, you drop in Castrol Edge. It's the titanium strong motor oil. It's exactly what I do. It's exactly what I put in my cars. Modern engines are smaller. They're more powerful. They operate at higher pressures than ever before. Higher engine pressure causes significant stress on the oil, so that oil needs to be dynamic and strong, and it has to stay strong. Castrol Edge is formulated with fluid titanium technology to help reduce friction and maximize your engine performance. Castrol Edge is 3 times stronger than the leading full synthetic against viscosity breakdown as tested in the Kurt Orban test in the 5W30 Visgrade, so you know it's legit. You know it's the real deal. If Orban says so, then it is so. Put it in your vehicle today. Castrol Edge.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
You're in a 4 minute break.
Thank O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Damn, Hawk, you look haggard. Just watching the bump in on CBS Sports Network. Come on, man. Hit that with some cold water or something. Some caffeine. Adam Hawk sitting in the front row. All right, welcome back. This email says, Rome, I'm on my way to the studio to hand deliver my RSVP for the Smack Off. Just wanted to give you a heads up because I can't stay long. I have to run to the body shop to fix this scratch on my Audi. And also, I'm being tailed by about a dozen porkies. Yours, Lef in La Gimmick. Ken Emission Viejo, we're SoCal on SoCal Crime. Were you launching a Smack Off for emailers? Were this being my RSVP to said event? There is no Smack Off, Kenny, for the emailers. That dude's on the pavement right now. That's not Lef and La Gimmick. This dude's face first, eating concrete, hands behind his back, out of the Audi. That's definitely not Lef.
Time to die.
That's not Lef. I know Lef. That's not Lef. My man's in a bad way. Of course, wouldn't you be? Next time, don't steal a car. That's a pretty grim scene. Okay, back to it. Thanks, Ken. Signed, Lef in La Gimmick. Lef in La Gimmick Beach has gone back to back. He's the La Gimmick Beach bully. He's trying to make it 3 in a row. Waiting on an RSVP from anybody who matters. All right, so I never thought that I would ever say this. In fact, on the list of things that I thought that I would never say, this might be right near the top. But I am about the real. I am about being totally transparent. This is my commitment to all of you. I call it the way I see it, and if I see something or I feel something, I'm going to say something. So here it goes. I think I'm starting to miss the Patriot way. I think I'm starting to miss the Patriot way. Yeah, I said it. And you know what? It felt pretty good to say it. Even though I thought that I would never say it, it feels like a giant weight off my shoulders. Now, don't get me wrong. I did not like the Patriot way. I always thought there was nothing more boring than a group of guys who leaked nothing and who said even less. But I was wrong. I found something worse. The only thing worse than no news ever coming from the Patriots is the constant drip of lame news or fake news coming from Foxborough. Practically every week since the Super Bowl, there has been something. Malcolm Butler not playing in the Super Bowl. Josh McDaniels becoming the new Colts head coach. Gronk thinking about retiring. Josh McDaniels not becoming the Colts new head coach. Belichick doesn't like Tom Brady's trainer. Tom Brady's contract. Gronk is being dealt. Gronk is still thinking about retiring. Malcolm Butler is leaving. So is Nate Solder and Deion Lewis and Danny Amendola. Gronk is bent about being chastised in front of the team for being a TB12 client. Tom Brady might not play this year. Gronk is going to play this year. Tom Brady is going to play this year. I mean, on and on and on. That's not even the whole list. And now you can add more drama to that list. Tom Brady was interviewed by Jim Gray at the Milken Institute Global Conference yesterday. He dropped a couple of gems. When asked about Butler being benched in the Super Bowl, Brady said, quote, "I wish he would have played." You know somebody, Tom Brady sounds like Alvin DeLauro? "I wish he would have played. But the coach didn't play him, and we still had a chance to win." End quote. Brady also said that he never received an explanation as to why Butler did not play. And when Jim Gray asked him if the fans deserved an answer, Brady said, and I quote, "I don't know. That's probably a better answer for the guy who owns our team." End quote. Oh, straight fire. Yeah, actually, not really. Not really, because that wasn't straight fire. That's just straight lame. And that's what's defined the Patriots offseason. Guys giving cute answers and adding fuel to an already hot fire. Just whack. It's lame. It's petty.
That's whack.
It's petty, and it's not the good Terry Rozier trolling kind of petty either. And we might as well get this out of the way as well. Tom Brady wants to play for a few more years. According to ESPN, Brady said, quote, "I have personal goals. I want to keep playing. I've said for a long time, I want to play to my mid-40s. I was told 3 years when I was 36, 37. You can't keep playing. No one wins Super Bowls at that age. It's a great challenge for me. I think I've been challenged my whole life. I feel like I can do it." End quote. Yeah, that should come as a surprise to absolutely nobody. I see no reason why that guy should stop. I see no reason why Brady should stop. Well, actually one reason. And it has to do with the next exchange that he had with my man Jim Gray.
"Do you feel appreciated by them, and do they have the appropriate gratitude for what you have achieved?"
"I plead the fifth." Look, man, that is a tough question. Yeah, I mean,
your wife seems to indicate. Yeah,
I think everybody in general wants to be appreciated more at work, you know, in their professional life. But there's a lot of people that appreciate me more than, you know, way more than I ever
lame.
Thought, you know, was possible as part of my life.
Cringy.
So, you know, take it from them?
Well, I think it's, you know, I think it's, you have different influences in your life. And I think the people that I work with, they're trying to get the best out of me. So they're trying to treat me in a way that they feel is going to get the best out of me. And, you know, I've got to get the best out of myself. I think what I'm learning as you get older is it comes from within. The joy, the happiness, those things come from inside. And, you know, to seek that from others, to seek that from outside influences, people you
dude,
work
take
with,
the fifth, you, man.
Cheer
stop.
Or cheer with you, or you know, I feel like it comes from within. For
yeah,
me.
So I got it. We got it, Albie. This is why Tom Brady should stop playing. Honestly, this is why he should stop playing. Never mind that he's an MVP at 40. This is why he should stop playing. Not because Belichick doesn't appreciate him, but because I don't appreciate this. What is this? This nonstop, relentless drama swirling around this team for months now. Man, it's so lame. It's tedious. What Tom Brady does on the field is amazing. And just like LeBron, the fact that he's doing it at this point in his career is incredible. Everybody really should take a step back and appreciate that. But it's getting tougher and tougher to appreciate it when we have to hear about how he and the other guys on that team do not feel appreciated. And because we have to suffer through dramatic answers like the one he just gave. Can I hear that one more time?
"Do you feel appreciated by them, and do they have the appropriate gratitude for what you have achieved?"
"I plead the fifth."
First off, let's just ignore the fact that delivery on "I plead the fifth" could not have been more wooden or laconic.
"I plead the fifth."
I'm not sure what role this guy was auditioning for with that line, but that was terrible. Then let's move on to the rest of his answer. Man, that's a tough question. That's a really tough question. No, it's not. Not really. It's a tough question only if you don't want to answer the question. If you feel appreciated by the team, it's not a tough question at all. It's a really easy question with a really easy answer. And then when you listen to all that random gibberish about everyone wanting to be appreciated at work. Honestly, I've got no idea what that means, other than he obviously feels like he's not appreciated at work by the Pats or by Bill Belichick. And then listen to the final answer. When Jim Gray asks him, are you happy? And he says, I have my moments. Let me tell you something. This all is very unpatriot-like and very boring. We get it. You don't like Belichick. Belichick doesn't like your trainer. You don't feel appreciated by Belichick. Great. We get it. We get it. Either blow it up or don't. But whatever you do, stop doing this. The Patriots are turning into that couple that you go out to dinner with, and they spend the entire night kind of passively, aggressively bickering with each other in front of you. Yeah, I don't know, Terry. Do you really think you should order that third gin? Well, maybe if you'd get off my case, I wouldn't have to, Susan. Meanwhile, everybody else at the table is sitting awkwardly and hoping that nobody wants dessert so they can get the hell out of there and go home. That's what the Patriots have become. Every time one of them gets near a microphone, they're taking these lame shots at each other. If you're going to break up, man, break up already. Whatever you do, just stop with these lame, kind of coy, wink-wink shots at each other. Get in a room, hash it out, fix it, or break up. In other words, someone call someone.
Someone call someone.
Someone fire someone. Someone quit. I don't care. None of us cares. Just stop doing this because it's lame. It's awful. Man, it's awful. Enough already.
I plead the fifth.
I plead the fifth. Yeah, but Tommy, are you happy? I have moments. Come on, man. This guy was so much cooler when we knew nothing about him. He was so much cooler when he said nothing at all. But they ain't let us in. This is what happens when they let you in. I mean, that was the guy that everybody wanted to be. No, I can't even listen to any of it. Man, stop. All of you, stop. Let's get a break in here. I never thought that I'd want the Patriot way back. I liked them so much better when they were boring, wooden, laconic, and didn't say jack and didn't talk to anybody at all. They were much cooler then. When we return, open phones. I'll try and share my thoughts on the LA Dodgers. Hey, maybe give away a golden ticket today. That'd be cool. Do you know what would be better than giving away a golden ticket? Taking away a golden ticket. I would settle for either one of those things. Go ahead, clone, sing it. Just do it, sing it. No matter how big or small your team is, Ferguson's got a winning game plan for pro contractors with thousands of plumbing repair parts, knowledgeable associates, and the largest national footprint in the game. When the pressure's on, you can count on Ferguson. Quick email, and then I'm going to go off the board completely with a really wild story. Totally off the board. Why? Because I can. Rome, I drink a fifth. Not I plead the fifth. I drink a fifth. Yours, Bobby Kraft at Parades.
I plead the fifth.
I
There's no
drink.
Billy Goat here. It's only Bill the Goat. Bill Belichick, the greatest coach of all time.
Wow. That is a truly horrific line. There is no Billy Goat here, just Bill the Goat?
I'm going to call upon the man. There's no Billy Goat here. It's only Bill the Goat. Bill Belichick, the greatest coach of all time.
You imagine how crucified, how murdered somebody would be on this program if they ever said anything like that. You imagine somebody calling or tweeting or emailing that line to this show. Never mind some billionaire owner.
I'm going to call upon the man. There's no Billy Goat here. It's only Bill the Goat.
No. You don't like that. Tweet deck would break if any of you ever tried that. And as horrible as many of you are, nobody's that bad. Nobody would even ever try that on this show. Yet, Bob Kraft did. Rome, when the AC/DC kicked in and Stickman dropped a Bondo reset, I started having flashbacks of that era of the show. Can I get a Subject Manning and Moeller drop from Lil Alvy? I'm dying over here. First of all, let me stop you right there. Bondo does not go nearly as far back as those other references that you had. Subject Manning and a Moeller drop from Lil Alvy, that goes back probably 10 years prior to that, if not more.
Paul in El Paso.
Hey, Rome. That was a good fight Saturday. What do they want? They got to die? I saw him get punched in the head. Then he got hit in the temple. His eyes rolled back. He went out. When it comes to boxing, do us a favor. Pimp David Rodriguez. He's the real deal out here. Heavyweight. I've been listening to you since you were dropping. Subject Manning. Moeller.
That's not a good call. No. Wore the delivery driver wars from like 10 years ago and selling 50-pound carrots from your trunk. Matt and Phoenix, we did have the delivery driver wars also back in the day. Dear Jim, totally agree with you. This lame, triple U, weak-ass Patriot drama. It's the worst. Yours, clone Twitter tiffs. Brett from Bugaha wore this being my RSVP for the email smack-off. Wore this being my RSVP for this week's podcast. Hey, Brett, you'll never be a part of either one of those things. One, there is no email smack-off. Two, you're not getting on the podcast, Brett. I've made that very clear. The fact you even get on this show is a miracle. And the only reason you do is because it's 3 hours. It's easier to play your way in. You know why, Brett? This show for you is like the NCAA tournament where every school is allowed in. Like, all you have to do is show up and you're in. That's you, Brett. But the podcast is like the real NCAA tournament, where 64, 65, 67, 68, not everybody gets in. That's you. You'll never get in. But you can be in the tournament where everybody's allowed. All right, so this is a strange story, really quickly. It's strange, but it's a feel-good story. And I want to end today's program on an upbeat note. A feel-good story, if there has ever been one. Now, have you ever been wrongfully accused of something? I know some of you clones have been rightfully accused of things. But have you ever been wrongfully accused? Kevin Curtis of Augusta, Maine has. So my man's 57. He was staring down a serious stint in the slammer for possession of 48 grams of heroin. 48 grams. My man was riding a serious horse. Riding the horse with 48 G's. Cops found a couple of bags with a grainy substance. Whoa, 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 Siri, take it easy. Hold on. Wow, man, how annoying. Siri found 48 grams of heroin on the internet. Anyway, this dude is rolling with 48 grams of heroin. A grainy substance in the glove box of his Impala. Thing is, Curtis wasn't even driving. He wasn't even in the car. So this is where the story gets a really weird twist. He lent the whip to his buddy Jesse. Jesse drove off the road and slammed into a light pole. When the cops found the car and the driver in the ditch, they also found what they thought was a grip of China White in the glove box. So they booked the driver, who then called Kevin Curtis from jail to explain what happened. Curtis gets to the jailhouse and he pleads with the cops that the heroin is not heroin. The H is not H. So what was it? Let's go ahead and play a guessing game. First of all, there's H in the car, but the guy who owns the car is not driving the car. But it's not H. So what do you think he alleged it was? Raw sugar, baking soda, blow. What do you think? Trick question. None of the above. It turns out testing confirmed last week exactly what Kevin Curtis said it was. And here's what Curtis went with. It's not baking soda. It's not sugar. It's not blow. It's my dead pop. Ashes of his deceased father who passed away 5 years ago. Like I said, feel good story. Yo, copper, That's not heroin. That's my dad. Yo, copper. It's not heroin. Hey, son, that's heroin. Oh, no. That's my dead pop. The only thing more bizarre than that being a lie is that being true. Like, why does this dude keep 48 grams of dad in his glove box? Why are the ashes that are 5 years old not in some urn or an empty can of Folgers, a rusted out can of decaf Folgers? Is this some elaborate scheme so this guy can use the carpool lane? Apparently, Kevin Curtis had just come into possession of the ashes from his sibs and had not yet removed them from the car. You know, kind of like, yeah, man, left my gym bag or my wallet in the car. This guy forgot dad. Not in the car, in the glove box. And the cops, bad enough that this guy forgot dad in the glove box, the cops thought dad was heroin. The worst part is the cops gave the driver, Jesse, a bunch of opiate overdose reversal medicine at the scene of the accident because they thought the guy had OD'd. On what? The other guy's dead dad. They gave him a reversal OD drug. You imagine how that must have gone. Officer, it's not mine. It's not heroin. Yeah, right. Take this injection. Like I said, feel good story. Good thing Kevin Curtis has got jokes. My man's got jokes. Quote, this was the first time my father was ever in lockup right here. And it took me forever to get him out. My dad was in lockup. Like they seized the heroin. They seized the 48 grams of heroin. That's why dad was in lockup. Man, Broham has got jokes. Yeah, I'm sure your dad's dying wishes was to be cremated and stored in plastic baggies in the glove box of a 2006 Impala that your homeboy wrapped around a light pole. Somebody please give these ashes to somebody that's going to spread them or put them in a respectable vessel. Please do it before it's too late. I hate to read a follow-up story that somebody injected this dude's deceased dad right into their veins. I'd hate to find out that somebody was smoking a bowl of their dead dad. Or however else you do heroin. I don't ride the horse. I don't even know. Other than injecting the horse, is there a way to use the horse? I don't want to find out about somebody getting a hold of these frozen freezer bags full of dad and freebasing him. But the way this story's gone so far, can you really rule that out? They pulled a dude over. Well, actually, he was already in a ditch. They got this guy out of a ditch and apprehended him for having heroin. Hey, look, I appreciate all officers. Man, that's a hard job. I don't want that job. But you can't tell the difference between heroin and a guy who's been dead 5 years? Don't they teach that at cop school? And this dude's got jokes. Hey, dad's never been in lockup that long. Like I said, a feel-good story. It's my man, Kevin Curtis. I love this dude. What's up, Kev? Sorry about Pops. Didn't even know he was sick. Sorry about Pops, Kev. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network. Sorry about Pops, but Broham, you are the man, Kevin. Kevin, do you want to be in the smack off? You got a good rap. You got a good way about you.
Position.
I'm sorry for your loss. I love Kevin Curtis. 57. Stay strong, my man. Thoughts and prayers. Stephen H. Town tweets, thanks for your purchase of 48 grams of heroin. Signed, Siri. Now I'm done. Thank you very much for listening. Hope that brightened your day. Nice pick-me-up on the way out the door. My thanks to Hayden Hurst, Howard Beck, John Morosi, the XR4TI. If you're on hold, not only am I not going to apologize, I'm going to say it's going to happen again. If you didn't get through and you're on hold for 2 hours, there's a reason. Y'all have an amazing day. See you right back here tomorrow. We are out.